All right, folks, welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show. Very excited to have a Friday episode for you. As always, very excited to thank and congratulate and celebrate and also uplift our partner, Echo. Echo is a shoe company that does not fuck around. And how do you know that? Well, you know that because of the LT1. It's made from an advanced bounce and rebound material that is embedded into the sole of you. Sorry, the S-O-L-E for ultralight rebound and game-changing comfort. So head over to golf.echo.com, E-C-C-O, or you can head over to their social media, which is Echo Golf, E-C-C-O Golf. And look forward to more stuff coming, maybe even a special shoe that you've never heard of or seen, but that's going to be a ways off.
I know that sometimes they make their products out of recycled golf balls.
They do?
Yeah, like the soles of the Echo shoes.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if it's all of them, but I was on a call earlier this week with someone from Echo.
That's fascinating.
Our friend Timo. Timo, if you're listening. I don't think I'm giving away trade secrets when I say that, but I love the Echoes. I wear the LT1s. Which ones are your favorite? You love the new ones, obviously.
I like the Biome.
Yeah, the H4. Biome looks good. They had some spikes a while back. You rocked those a while.
Classic shoe. Me and Rick like that shoe.
Yeah, and I love how customizable they are. There's the ones with the, what are they, like neon green accents?
Yep. The LT1s. Look, at the end of the day, the cool thing about Echoes is that it's like they're not, you know, some shoes you get and you're like, those shoes look awesome. Mm-hmm. You put them on your feet and you're like, I feel like an asshole because they hurt. My favorite thing about Echoes is they look good and they feel good. And since the very beginning, they have kept my feet warm or dry or cool in any circumstances, and they also look fucking slick. So that's my pitch.
Yeah, you've worn Echoes in the middle of the Caribbean and also on the northernmost golf course in the world.
That's true.
So they can survive all terrains. There's quite the thing coming. We're going to be at Tobacco Road, one of our favorite golf courses in the world, in just about a couple weeks, and we're going to do something special with Echo there. So
yeah, and the last thing I'll say about Echo is they came through in a big way. I said, hey, will you hook up all of our captains with some shoes? And they were like, yeah, we'd love to.
Yeah, they didn't even hesitate.
They're down, and you know, more to come with Echo, obviously, but check them out. Try them on. Put them on your feet. Put them on your head. Put them in your heart, folks, because their soul is your soul. All right, now we got a really special show with my friend, Alex Bodney. Alex Bodney, you are on some level, obviously we're friends, so there's that. But yes, you're also on some level, like, would you say you're like a child of the PGA Tour?
I would say that I have a unique relationship with the game of golf because of how I was raised. Yeah.
When did you first enter like PGA Tour headquarters? How old were you?
Days old. I'm assuming, yeah.
So tell us about it. Like, how does this to me is a fascinating and slightly unusual story. Obviously, you love golf. You live in Austin. We're friends. We hang out. But like, this whole part of your life is very unique, and I think a lot of people would be fascinated by it.
Yeah, I think the story is probably more my dad's than it is mine and my family's. But my dad had a golf club put in his hand when he was 7, and it changed our whole family's life. And you know, that eventually led him to a very brief stop on the PGA Tour for, I think, like 2 years, where he made less money than you and I have made this week, probably. And he'd be the first one to admit that. I got a funny story with that, too. But and then after his playing career was done, became a sports agent. And Dean Beeman, commissioner at the time, called him, and they were looking for somebody to run their player relations department. And this was probably like mid-80s. And the PGA Tour was like 15 to 30 employees back then. I mean, it was a small organization. So started running player relations for them. And then they wanted to grow their business internationally. And my dad just kind of raised his hand. And so whether it was Asia, Europe, Australia, wherever it was, really had a pretty big hand in growing the tours business internationally. And so, yeah, I grew up, I literally tell people I wanted nothing to do with the game of golf until I was probably like 16 or 17, despite growing up with the ideal childhood to become a golfer, a professional golfer as a parent, and access to TPC Sawgrass as literally my playground if I wanted it to be. but I couldn't run or hit anybody while I was doing it, so I didn't have any interest in it. And now I'm just completely addicted and in love. And then I eventually worked for the tour as well. So I worked for the tour for 4 years. That's what brought me to Austin. That's kind of the genesis of you and I meeting each other, which is kind of a funny story in and of itself. But yeah, the game of golf literally has shaped my family's life.
Yeah. Yeah, when we met, I don't even, do you know the story about how we met?
I do not know this, and I didn't know you worked for the tour.
Yeah.
So I was at a coffee shop right in downtown Austin, like on Congress there. And I think I'd only lived here for like a month.
If that.
Yeah, it was like very early on. And I was like still figuring out my way around town, you know, and it was like a weekend, kind of nice weather. And I was like getting this.
What
like,
year would that have been?
That would have been 2020.
Okay. So yeah. I had already left the tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had, I remember. And so, yeah, I was getting a coffee and, you know, this like, you know, like nice looking redhead guy comes over and he's like, hey, man, like, you know, my name's Alex. Like, obviously, I'm aware of Random Golf Club or whatever. And, you know, we started talking or whatever. And the funniest moment for me was, you know, Alex pulled out his phone. I was like, let's change numbers. He pulls out his phone.
Completely oblivious to it.
He didn't even realize it. He pulls out his phone and his screensaver is one of our designs from the Houston event, the Moon Man.
Wait, really?
Yeah. It's like the it's
so
like
we
the
had
line
talked
drawing.
For like 45 seconds on the sidewalk, and mm-hmm. he's like, hey, let's exchange numbers. And I literally completely oblivious to what was going on. I opened my phone to have him put his number in my phone, and he goes, lock your phone? And I was like, what? He goes, lock your phone. So I lock my phone, and I unlock it again, and I was like, oh, damn, like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
And it was the Moon Man from the Houston event. I just thought it was a cool sketch, and so yeah. It had been my lock screen forever. But the reason that I stopped him was while I was working at the tour, I don't know if you remember this part of the story, we had a big employee summit
yes.
at Sawgrass in 2017, 16?
Yes, it would have been 16, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and so literally all tour employees from all over the country were at Sawgrass, and it was the day that they announced Scratch Golf.
Yeah.
And Eric took the stage. Okay. And as you tell the story, we're as nervous as you've ever been in your life.
So nervous.
Yeah. And so that was the introduction of Scratch Golf. So I was in the room when Scratch was kind of announced and got to listen to Eric talk about what Scratch stood for, what it was going to be. And it was just this breath of fresh air that the game needed, in my opinion. And so I kind of had followed his story and stuff. And then we've joked, like, I've had to stop listening to the podcast because I hate hanging out with him and like wanting to talk about recent podcast episodes because I feel like I'm stalking him.
This happens to some of my friends as well.
Yeah.
Right.
They'll talk to me about something. And then after we talk about it, I'll be like, wait a second. I didn't tell you that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they'll be yes, like, that's the exact problem right yeah. there.
I think I heard on the show. Hold on. So that must have been 8 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Had the first...
Oh, wait. Scratch?
The Scratch yeah. meeting. Had the first episode of Adventures in Golf...
No.
Had it been filmed?
I think maybe a couple episodes of season one were out. And this is a 10-year event. Like every 10 years, the tour gets everyone together, 1,000 people. And Jody Brothers, whom I'm sure you know...
Yep.
Hit me up and was like, hey, we're thinking maybe you could speak at the summit. And I was like, cool, whatever. And then like legit, dude, like 2 days before I was like, hey, Jody, how many people are going to be there? And he's like, 1,000. And I was like, gulp.
Did you know what you're going
to
say?
Like, I was like, how long do I have to speak for? And he's like, I was thinking 30 for 35 minutes. And I was like, oh, fuck, man. And I didn't have any visuals or anything prepared.
Yeah.
And I remember there are two funny events, right? Or three. So I get there. And I like locked myself in my hotel room because I was like, I need to figure out what I'm going to say. And I've got like, you know, 22 hours to figure this out. So I finally feel like I've got it. I feel like I've got it memorized. And then I go down to the restaurant that everyone was eating at. And no one else was there except for three other guys. And they're all sitting at this one table in a banquet room. And I walk in. And I'm obviously not wearing a polo or an Oxford or a quarter zip.
I was going to comment on that. But yeah.
And I walk in and these three guys are at this table, like in kind of the middle of the room. And one of them stands up and he says, hey, can I help you? And I was like, what? What do you mean? And he's like, oh, this is for a PGA Tour event. And I was like, oh, yeah, no. Like I'm going to be speaking on it in a little bit. And he's like, really?
I was literally about to say he had my attention as soon as he took the stage because there was no polo. There was no quarter zip. It wasn't tucked in. And I was like, damn, this guy must be somebody if they let him go on the stage in like regular human pedestrian clothing.
Yeah. Well, I dressed differently then too. So I was wearing a sweatshirt. and it had like screen printed birds all over it. It was like very loud, and I was wearing shoes that were completely red, like red sole, red upper.
Shorts or pants?
I was wearing like sweats, I think. I don't know what the fuck was in my head, but the funny story is that I was backstage getting ready to speak, and I was going right before Tim Fincham, and I think after Ty Votaw, the commissioner, and then the co-commissioner or whatever.
CMO, whatever. It was at the time.
And so I'm terrified. And I had actually gotten beta blockers, which, you know, slow down your heart rate when you're doing something nerve wracking or whatever. And so, but I'm not, it's not kicking in. So I'm in the wings and I'm just like, I'm just going to meditate. So I close my eyes and like I meditated for like 30 minutes. I didn't know this, but apparently Rick Anderson came in, and Rick Anderson's like number two or number three at the PGA Tour. Rick Anderson comes in and he looks at me and he immediately walks out and goes to Jody. And he's like, what the fuck? Your guy's asleep. Like, he just thinks I'm some, like, drug-addled.
You're in
like,
sweatpants. You've been locked in a hotel room for 22 hours.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's a really fond memory of mine. And it's funny because it's so long ago. And, like, there's really only a handful of people that, like, I'm connected with that, like, you know, were there for that. So it's really interesting. You know, like, it was a wild time.
I almost want to dive in deeper there because the current season of Adventures in Golf, season 8, is coming out right now. And in a couple days, you're going to see the St. Lucia episode, and I hope you've been enjoying if you're listening. But you told me recently, I don't know if we can talk about it on the podcast. You tell me if we can talk about it. But you told me how much you spent on season 1 of Adventures in Golf.
Yeah, I spent $2 for every dollar they gave me.
I think that's honestly, I lost
a lot of money.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Like that story of how much you invested.
That's entrepreneurism.
Yeah, I mean, I saw an opportunity and I was like, well, you know, I mean, for me, it was like at that time, I've learned how to not spend $2 every time I get a dollar, but.
Have you?
Fuck you. That's my favorite part about playing golf with you is you take the shit, but you give it. Yeah, no. So I think like at that time, it was like the idea was the most valuable thing, you know? I also there was a hamstrung season where it was like, I got this random job from this lady who was like, will you film my silk factory in Hyderabad, India? And I was like, absolutely. Can we do it in 3 weeks so that I can go film in Mumbai as well? And like, it was two guys at the time, but
Wait, so you would do commercial jobs
as
like a, in your production house?
Yeah.
Like this is Lang Creative?
That's how I got to Japan to do golf insurance.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's when I went to Scotland for the first episode, I did another job for a guy named Josh Evenson. I don't know if you know him. He wrote a book called Letters to St. Andrews, where all these, I actually wrote a letter, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, everyone wrote letters to St. Andrews. And so I connected with Josh and he was like, hey, will you help me make a video? And I was like, absolutely. And then while I was there, I also made the Adventures in Golf episode.
So you were just bootstrapping the whole thing.
Everything was bootstrapped. So the money they gave me, like.
You should do an episode in it. On Adventures in Golf about this.
That's a cool idea. Have you heard my, I have the Sweat Lodge episode idea I pitched a couple months ago. I want to go to South America.
Ayahuasca.
Have him do ayahuasca.
Yeah.
And the whole episode is like him in the Sweat Lodge. And then he's dreaming, right, about the earlier episodes. Yeah. And it gets all meta and the voiceover.
It used to be very different. And, you know, if you're caught up to the seasons and you've seen the Maui episode, like, big thanks to Alex for connecting us to Mark Rolfing because... Oh, yeah. You know, we were together for Thanksgiving dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I went to your house for Thanksgiving dinner. That was amazing.
We're talking about
That was a wild time. And, you know, I was telling you we were going to Maui, and you're like, you got to connect with Mark. And I was like, Mark. And you were like, Rolfing. I was like, oh, amazing. And like, you know, did you even know this? This is one of the craziest things about Mark Rolfing. I think we talked about it a little bit, but he had a show called Global Golfing Adventures.
We've talked about this.
Yeah. And it was sponsored by Continental Airlines.
Which became
United
Airlines.
It's the same logo.
That's crazy.
That is fucking insane. So now we have a weekly chat with Mark Rolfing for an hour where some of it's business, some of it's like creative. You know, we actually came up with an idea for a show that we want to do together on Netflix. So we'll see if that happens.
Love that.
But you know what I mean? Like he's just like, he's really turning into like a mentor for me, which is.
And I mean, like Mark and Debbie were really close or are really close with my parents. And my mom was at that Thanksgiving dinner, put on a show in the kitchen. Yeah. Shout out, Mom. And you were like Maui and doing the story on recovery and everything. And it's like, if you want to talk about golf, Maui, and the community,
yeah,
there's only one person to go have a conversation with.
So I just feel like I need to really broach the subject here because you've talked about Sawgrass. And, you know, you don't have a straight answer when someone asks you if you've had a hole-in-one. But the story to get there is just next level. Can you please tell us the story about the 17th hole at Sawgrass when you put one in?
Yeah, sure. So played literally hundreds of rounds of golf at Sawgrass. It's my home track. I feel really weird saying that out loud. I'm sure there's a bunch of people rolling their eyes out there somewhere. But and had never broken 80 and was cruising to break an 80, was in really good shape, get to the 17th.
Hold on, you're playing with your dad. This is the first time you're going to beat him.
Yeah, that's also true. That was also a factor. I was going to beat my dad.
How old were you?
Probably early 20s. I was to guess. It's okay. Probably about like 10 years ago.
But you weren't working for the tour yet, or you just started?
No, I was probably still in college, honestly. Okay. Might be working at the tour at that time. But again, like I was probably like a 5 or 6 handicap at this time. So breaking 80 at the stadium course is no small feat.
And you're playing with your dad. Who is your dad? Like, you know, people are listening and they have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. So my dad, Mike Bodney, worked at the tour for 25 years. Fun fact related to Sawgrass, he's getting ready to turn 70. He's won the club championship at Sawgrass in his 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s and decided he wasn't going to play again until he turned 70 so he can mark another decade off. And so he's won in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and wants to win in 2020s as a 70-year-old. So that one's coming up next. But so he's obviously very familiar with this golf course, and he always jokes. He'll always be like, 8 shots back, because they play the Valley course one day and then they play the stadium course another day for the club championship. He'll be like 8 shots back after they play the Valley, and he's like, I'm right where I need to be. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, these guys are going to shoot 84 tomorrow and I'm going to shoot 72 and we'll all be good. I'm like, okay. But so yeah, on pace to beat my dad, on pace to break 80, a lot of pressure on standing on that 17th tee. I remember I had a pitching wedge in my hand, so we're not playing the tournament tee, we're playing one up off to the left there, and I flush this pitching wedge and I'm just posing on it. I'm so excited, pins right in the middle of the green, and a gust of wind comes up and just knocks this ball dead in its tracks, lands on the boards on the front of the green and bounces straight up in the air, basically laughing at me as it comes back into the water, and I'm just devastated. And I proceed to look at my dad and I say, throw me a ball. He throws me a ball. I put it on the ground. By the way, we're playing with Blaine McAllister, college teammate of Freddie Couples, played on tour forever, won a bunch on the senior tour, and his son. And so I say, throw me a ball. Throws me the ball, put it on the ground, and I scull this golf ball straight over the green. So now it's in the water deep. Throw me a ball. Throws me another ball. I lay the sod over this golf ball, and it goes about 8 feet into the water in front of me. And now I am beside myself. And if anybody has played golf with me, especially back in those days, calm would not be an adjective that would be used.
Yeah, the sea was angry that day.
And
you're not heading to the drop zone.
No. I have not moved.
Yeah.
My feet have moved a net of like 8 inches throughout this whole ordeal.
Yeah.
And so throw me a ball. Spray one off to the right. At this point, Blaine and his son are standing on the green like, wrap it up, let's go. And so one more time, throw me a ball. The fifth one, am I allowed to curse?
Yes.
So fifth one, I flush it. It's right at the flag. And I literally scream, get in the hole. And I turn around and I start walking towards the cart. And I literally turn back to the green just in time. One hop straight in the hole for an 11.
That is the craziest hole in one story I've ever heard.
Yeah, is that the best 11?
The best 11 ever made.
In the history of golf?
Maybe. I'd love to have some title as the greatest of all time at something. But
I mean, you
couldn't do it on a better hole.
That could maybe never have happened before on that hole.
Potentially.
Like make a one for an 11?
So I do answer the question. To be clear, you started it with, I do answer the question. I do not have a hole in one.
Fair.
Okay, but what's
and then I tell that story because there's not a person that hears it that doesn't think it's hilarious.
It's amazing.
Let's do some quick math on that. Would you rather have a birdie that day? Well, not that day, but would you rather have a birdie or an 11 with a hole in one? Like with a hole out.
Hindsight being what it is, I have now beaten my dad on that golf course and broken 80 there multiple times, and neither one of those things is anybody interested in, so I'd rather have the story for the rest of my life.
Live an interesting story.
Now, if I was like 10 years later, still hadn't broken 80 and still hadn't beat my dad, I'd probably answer the question differently.
Right. But that story has legs, unlike the golf ball.
Yeah. Funny enough, I was at, we were just talking about it. I was at Gauzer Ranch last summer in Idaho. We drove across to play Coeur d'Alene with the floating green.
Yeah.
The night before we go to play Coeur d'Alene, I told that story because somebody brought up hole in ones and stuff. So the tables, you know, loving the story. I get up on the floating green, whatever it is, 14 or whatever it is in that golf course, and I hit a great shot and it comes up just short. And I'm like, throw me a ball. And they throw me a ball and I put it in the ground. There are people out there that can validate this. The ball landed 8 inches behind the hole and ended 2 inches on the other side of the hole. And I mean, in like a straight line with the divot, it had to have touched the cup.
Yeah.
And we were all dying. We're like, dude, if you would have done that again on an iconic like island green hole, like what are the odds? So that's actually a big regret that ball didn't go in the hole.
I don't know. You know, I don't know if you want to be that guy, you know, like some things you put out in the universe.
Hey, it would have been a 3. It's better than 11.
It's true. All American par.
Yeah. Freddie did that.
At 17. Right.
That's a very special experience. You've also had another experience that do you know anyone else, non-professional jock, that's caddied in a major?
I know you're about to join my club. Yes. I would imagine that there's plenty of people.
You think so?
Yeah.
I guess.
Family members, friends. Yeah. I bet there's plenty.
But in the tournament itself is different than like the par 3 championship at the Masters.
Yeah, for sure. But like, I would imagine that's less unique than.
I think it's pretty unique. Like when Akshay did it with his girlfriend on the Korn Ferry Tour, that was like big news.
But did she do a one-off or she did it repeatedly?
She did it repeatedly, I think.
She did it like a couple times.
I mean, yeah, like even Westwood's wife, Patrick Reed, like that's like, I'm talking about like,
but what I think
I'm talking about like, I have no experience and I've done it once.
It's the only event I've ever caddied in is a major championship.
I mean, mark it. So tell us the story of caddying for the first time ever in a major championship.
Slightly intimidating, but not really. And you know, I've been around the game enough. And at that point, I was still working at the tour. Being around a professional golf event is not anything foreign to me. I think if I did something else for a living, maybe an added layer of intimidation, but was around professional golf events literally my entire life. But the story starts way before you get to Columbus. You know, my dad retired in like 2010 maybe, and he had two things that he wanted to do. He wanted to watch me play college basketball, and he wanted to play amateur golf again at a really high level. So he had gotten his amateur status back way back in the day, had no interest. His joke, everybody used to ask him, they were like, are you going to try and go play on the senior tour? And he's like, those guys kicked my ass 30 years ago. Why would I be able to beat them now?
Yeah, good point.
And so, you know, I think he had scratched that itch. Like, he played professional golf. He chased that dream and got it to where it was going to go. So he just wanted to play amateur golf at a really high level again and kind of really dedicate himself to being able to do that. And with that, you know, tons of local tournaments that he's winning and U.S. senior Florida senior AMs and stuff like that. But the goal is always to qualify for the Senior Open. Just that's what anybody wants to do, right? And so a couple of close calls throughout the years. And then this was probably, it was 2016. And I got a call. I remember where I was. I was driving on Barton Springs Road.
Where? Like Terry Black's?
Right by in between Juliet and Terry Black's.
No shit.
Right in there. And it was my dad. And I answered the phone. And he said, hey, I got a question. I'm like, what's that? He goes, what are you doing between July, whatever Father's the Day. Dates were. July.
It's Father's Day, right?
Father's Day is the real Open.
Oh, right. The men's senior Open is the week. Oh, it's just a different month.
Yeah, I think it's. I think it was in July. It may have been in June. Whatever. And he goes, "What are you doing from July 9th through the 14th?" And I'm like, "I have no idea." And he's like, "Would you want a caddy for me in the U.S. Senior Open?" And I was just like, I still get chills. And I was like, "Oh my God!" Like, I'll drop. I don't care what's on my calendar. Like, yeah, of course. And so a really cool moment. And so start planning for that. And he had shot like 66 or something in a qualifier in order to qualify. And, you know, it's just like the U.S. Open. There's stages to it. And so this was the final stage. And he went out and posted a number. And so it was finally like he had done it. So that's kind of how the story starts. And then, you know, leading up to it, obviously, something that I did, I was still working at the tour. So do you guys know Sue Kramer, Pat Velasquez?
No.
Tour? They run all the merchandise for the tour.
Okay.
So I said, "Hey, I want to do something cool for my dad for the U.S. Senior Open." And so they helped me get in touch with, he's been a Titleist guy forever. So we got in touch with the right folks at Titleist and had a custom panel made for a Titleist staff bag. And so dad grew up in Nevada. He grew up in Reno and then spent a majority of his adult life working for the tour and stuff in Florida. And so on that bag panel, there's the state outline of Nevada and the state outline of Florida kind of like blended together underneath his name. And so I surprised him with that. I sent it to his wife and said, "Hey, I need you to hide this until he starts packing to go to the event." And so as he's packing to get ready to go to the event, she's like, "Hey, I need to give you something," because I was in Austin, obviously he's in Florida. And so he got the bag and so put all his clubs in the bag and stuff. So kind of that's another little piece to it. And then arrive in Columbus. And for me, you know, I grew up as an athlete, played everything until high school and then started to play basketball and take that really, really seriously. But my dad, my mom too, but my dad was like my support system, just like a lot of us throughout our lives. And the role of a caddy is to be the support system for the athlete, right? And so for 1 week, I got to do a complete role reversal with what my dad had done for me for my entire life, which was support me and drive me to practice and drive me to games and, you know, help where he could. And so, you know, for me, I took on like portioning out snacks for during the round and like making sure he was stretched and all this stuff. And it was just like, I wanted to do my part so that if something didn't go well, it wasn't because I wasn't prepared and that I could give him the best shot to have the experience that he wanted to have. And, you know, my dad and I have a really unique and cool relationship. It's anybody that's around us we're best friends as much as we are father and son. And so I remember going to the first tee. Well, so there's player family dining and, you know, the whole deal that's normally there. And my dad's known all these guys since the 70s. They've all played junior golf, college golf, professional golf together. And then he worked at the tour for 25 years. And so they know him in that capacity. That's the most recent capacity. So all week we're sitting in player family dining and it's name after name after name are walking up and they're like, "Hey, Mike, how you doing?" And he's like, "Hey, I'm good. What's going on?" And they're like, "What are you doing here?" And he's like, "I'm playing." And they're like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Yeah, I qualified." And they're like, "Oh, no shit. That's awesome." And it was just like every single day, it was like four or five of those. And so that was really cool to kind of see, because you watch all these guys on TV, and I know that my dad knows them on a very personal level, but to just watch those guys and the admiration and how cool they thought it was,
yeah,
that he was like back playing again, taking it seriously and had gotten it to that level.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Tiger say what's up?
Tiger did not play in the U.S. Senior Open in 2016, believe it or not.
Right. I'm so out of it.
And so,
so who was like, talk to me, like who was there where you were like, whoa?
It's like Layman, Billy Andre, you know, all those guys that are, yeah. And Mike, we played practice round with Michael Allen, who was like a really, he's kind of top 10 on the senior tour for a long time. Then my dad actually helped coach him while he was at, while he was in college. And so they've known each other forever.
Right.
Good family friend. So just all the names that you kind of know. So practice rounds, everything's going fine. And then you get to Thursday and it's like, all right, it's the day of reckoning. Like, let's go peg it, see what happens. And, so we had, who was there? My stepmother was there, her son, her daughter, their significant others, uncle and cousins from the Baltimore area had come. My best friend's parents from Jacksonville were there, because this was kind of a once in a lifetime deal. Like, you're not banking on him doing this a few years in a row. And so the folks that were really close to them wanted to support him. And so he's got like a little gallery around the putting green as we're getting warmed up. And I'm paying attention and my athlete brain is going, and I'm like, dude, you're not focused. You're not locked in. Like, and I walk up to him and I said, hey, we here to play golf, or do you want to, you know, hang out with these people and laugh and giggle? Like, you tell me what you want to do. And he kind of gives me the like middle finger, like, don't talk to me like that. And I'm like, okay, but I'm just telling you, like, you're not locked in right now. And so he kind of gets his mind right. We go off, and the short version of the story is my stepmother made a book that has a bunch of pictures from the week. And it was dedicated to me. And the opening of the book is written by my dad. And the title of the book is "The Most Fun I've Ever Had Shooting 180 or 163 or whatever it was." And the numbers were not good, but it was the coolest.
Wait, 163 combined on Thursday and Friday?
Yeah.
Couple of 80s, yeah.
Which is still like, 80s. He's not, But you guys still had fun. The spirits were high.
It was the coolest week, literally maybe that I've ever had. Like, from the amount of time that we got to spend together, being in the hotel together, going to practice rounds together. Like, you know, you pick up the courtesy car, you do the whole thing. And but again, to me, it was at that point I was 24 years old. So I've had 24 years of this human being doing everything in his power to make my dreams and everything come true. And I got 7 days to flip it and do everything that I could to help him have the week that he wanted to have. So unfortunately, we bumped the flights up a little bit. We had Sunday evening flights booked, but they became Saturday morning flights pretty quick. But it was the coolest experience ever.
Is that the most amount of time you spent on a golf course without hitting a club?
No, I worked for the PGA Tour for 4 years. I've spent a lot of time on golf courses without swinging clubs, unfortunately.
You know, a question I get a lot is, you know, like, oh, like, I want to work.
Well, hold on. Oh, and you're joining the club. You're going to be a professional caddy in a major championship.
I forgot.
This is the scoop.
I forgot. Yeah, so I'm going
to
caddy.
I don't know if I'm allowed to announce that.
No, you
That's
are.
That's a secret.
I mean, we're going to announce it. I mean, we just throw it on the podcast.
If you're listening right now, congratulations. You heard about this a week before everyone else.
Right now. All right. Sorry to interrupt everybody, but I want to talk to you about shopping. Nope. It doesn't. It says Shopify, rather. Anyway, here's the thing. Shopify was really the beginning of how we got started over here at Random Golf Club, because starting an online store was really not in my list of things that I wanted to do or thought I could do or ever thought I would do. But the really cool thing about Shopify is that it is literally a global commerce platform. It's like Instagram, but for selling shit.
For example, this week, we actually just dropped two new shirts, the Bud Chapman collection, and it's because of Shopify that we're able to do that directly to you. We're able to do a pre-sale, actually.
Those shirts aren't even real.
Yeah, and they're...
They will be real.
They will be real, so go to randomgolfclub.com and check those out. And also, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/EAL show.
Boom.
Boom. All lowercase.
Yeah. So take the world into your own hands and embrace Shopify in so doing. If you're a creator.
Shopify.com/EAL show.
And of course, I don't know, maybe Plunge uses Shopify. That'd be an interesting question, because we're going to talk about Plunge right now. If you know, you know. The cool thing about Plunge is that they started off as a cold plunge. And in my opinion, it was one of the first out, but it was also one of the best around for the price. There's obviously been a lot of competition that's come up, but I still stand behind the power of my chiller, the size of my tub, but it's not just that, because Plunge has evolved into another generation, another temperature,
ooh,
if you will. And they've gotten a lot hotter because they invented, well, maybe they didn't invent the sauna, but they definitely made their own, and it is badass. It goes to 230 degrees. Jojo almost died in it once.
I did, yeah. And then the next day you put the sweatshirt and sweatpants on and you tested it to the max.
It's actually easier in sweats because a lot of the heat of the steam sauna is like...
It's direct coil or whatever?
Yeah, it's like it touches your skin. So on some... I mean, it wasn't easy by any means, but big news in the shed here. Jojo's about to get his Plunge.
Yeah, I'm going to be cooler and cooler by the week. Nothing beats it. I'm going to jump in Barton Springs tonight, which is the local pond body of water
67.
Reservoir. 67. And how much colder is the Plunge if I set it low?
I mean, it would be 28 degrees colder. At 39 is, you know, where I operate.
Yeah, the difference between that, the difference between what I always thought was jumping in cold water, something like Barton Springs, and 28 degrees colder, is the difference between true recovery, is what I'm learning to understand.
I'm kind of excited to see how you change.
Yeah, do you think I'm going to, like, what do you think is going to happen?
What I found is by using the Plunge, I actually have more, like, emotional tranquility. Like, annoying things don't annoy me as much because I've already submerged myself into a body of, like, basically freezing water.
Yeah, and you might think I'm an emotionally chill person, but as soon as the pod ends, roid rage, I throw laptops at Keffer. There's a reason, yeah. Eric's making me get this Plunge, you know, yeah. he's saying, yeah, I gotta chill out.
You know, you can't see it, but Jojo's actually chained to the wall, so he doesn't come at me.
No, we love the guys at Plunge, and we really think it'll change your life.
Yeah, and just some talking points on the Plunge itself. Let's just talk about the sauna, right? It fits 7 people. It's got a great ergonomic design, so you're not crouched over like one of those barrel saunas. And it's got a flexible use, so you can like flip up the benches and do yoga in there, which was kind of sick. And I have found, just, you know, anecdotally, that what's really good about the sauna is I'll invite, you know, friends and family over. And, you know, it's basically a place to chat. You know, and I've had many men and some women in there, and you kind of like, you talk about real shit, because you're, you know, when you're at 200, 210,
you're exposed emotionally, physically.
Yeah, it peels away the layers of the onion much faster than, you know, anything else. And then you pair it with the cold, and you basically get a buzz, folks.
Should we email me and tell me if you would like us to do a podcast where the first half of the podcast is in, should it be the sauna, and then the second half is in the cold plunge?
I usually cold, hot, cold.
You know what we should do? Let's do an ad read from the Plunge.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, yeah. So we can really hear.
I'll do
what
the
it's
first. I'll do the first 90. You do the second 90.
Just plunging.
I love it.
Remotely. Okay.
Because we won't have two next to each other. We can sit and do it together. I've been in one plunge with two men.
Yeah. How was that?
I mean, it was memorable.
Use the code low temps, low scores.
Low temps, low scores, guys. Head over to Plunge. Change your life. Make it better. Obviously, not worse. You're gonna do great. See you guys back on the show. Yeah, so I'm going to caddy at the PGA at Valhalla for Rich Beam.
It's awesome.
And
if you
need
any tips on how to professionally rake a bunker, you just let me know.
Well, actually, that's my biggest bit of nervousness. I'm not worried that I'll disappoint Rich, because I don't think he expects much. He knows what he's getting into. I'm worried that I'll offend other caddies.
Yeah.
Did you have that feeling?
No, I wasn't necessarily worried about that. My dad made it very clear what his expectation was of me. And it was to be ahead of him and to know front, middle, back. I wasn't telling him what club to hit, what shot to hit. That wasn't my lane. My lane was to know every number, front, middle, back, wherever we were standing.
Yeah.
And as long as I had that, I was doing my job. But then in terms of like offending other caddies, you can just have a couple conversations. You figure out the cadence of passing the flagstick, and
yeah.
I mean, you know how to rake a bunker. That's...
I'm pretty good at it, I feel like. Yeah.
Amateur, I got a lot of practice that week.
Yeah.
For an amateur event like that, you still don't get a rangefinder there, or you do?
Well, that was not an amateur event. I mean, that is an amateur championship. And no, they had not
Now you can.
Now you can.
You can in a USGA event. I don't know.
Without slope, I think is the rule.
Yeah. At that time, no. There was no rangefinder.
Yeah. So how do you get the front metal back?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're finding sprinkler head.
And then you're walking it off.
And then you've got the tee sheet in your hand.
Did you ever get a number wrong, do you think?
Probably. I'm not a big math guy, so I'm sure.
That's what I would be nervous about.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a math guy necessarily.
I could do that.
You're a math guy.
Your player's double checking you.
I feel fine with the numbers. Like, I could walk that shit off. Yeah. I think maybe I'll even bring like a measuring stick. Like a, you know?
Are you allowed to?
Probably not. But it'd be amazing to do it.
Rich Beam disqualified caddy using a measuring stick.
Eric brought an abacus.
Rich, you want to make headlines, pal? Are we here for dollars or impressions?
Did you ever you didn't do any putt reading? Did you all ever disagree about a read? Did you disagree about anything?
No, I think my dad had a pretty clear understanding that he knew what was going on a lot better than I did once we got to the putting surface, and so I was pretty much off to the side unless I was.
Yeah.
I think there is some world at Valhalla where you see a putt and you like really believe it, and Rich says that's left or right, and you're like, oh,
right edge.
That's right edge, Rich.
Right edge, hard.
That happened to me last weekend.
Really?
First hole, I was very sure that this putt was breaking. I was like, we got this like two balls outside right, and the caddy's like, nah, it's left edge. I was like, we can argue about which how much it's going one way, but if we're arguing about which way it's going, that's not a good start. And I was right, and that was the end of green reading.
No more advice.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah.
That's tough because it's a lot of pressure to put on the caddy to basically, you know, actually, I played one golf course once where the caddy was a legend. Like, it was the best caddy I've ever had in my life. And I remember on the fifth hole, and he's like, this thing breaks 15 feet. And I was like, really? How can you read that? And he's like, you don't read greens here. You remember them.
Oof.
And it really is the only way to truly know.
Wait, who are you talking about?
That was the caddy at Augusta.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my experience with that is
he was filthy.
Not a caddy. I had the fortune to play Oakmont with Bob Ford. Yeah.
Everyone who doesn't know who Bob Ford is, that's
use your Google possible. Machine.
Yeah, he's considered the what would be like the sort of most well known and highly regarded
of the modern era for sure.
Yeah. Head golf professional or director of golf?
Head pro, I would
head
say.
Head pro, yeah. Oakmont.
Seminole. Simultaneously.
And he just left to go to Seminole full-time, right?
No, he just retired.
Oh, he retired,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so he went Seminole full-time, and now he's retired.
Yeah.
We're actually going to Ireland with him this summer, him and his eldest son. So pretty excited. Yeah. But to go around Oakmont, which is like a Valhalla, like some of these places, like super tricky to watch a human being that has played that golf course thousands of times probably. And I mean, every putt, every lag putt's within 8 inches. And you're just like, I don't even know how you see what, it's the same thing.
Yeah. He just remembers
reading it. Yeah. Yeah. Probably do it with his eyes closed.
Yeah. And he probably even remembers pieces on the fairway that'll send you into a certain area. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Even in Kapalua, I thought we played with a head pro at Kapalua and
such a cool golf course.
The knowledge he had.
Yeah.
And it was also the kind of knowledge he had was calming. Like it's not just you should aim the putt here and then execute. It's just a lot more about think about your approach shot in this way.
And I found that golf course actually wasn't that difficult from a green readings perspective.
They're pretty flat.
Because you just find the water and it doesn't really even matter what's going on in the on the green in front of you. You find the water and the ball is breaking that way, regardless of what you see in the little micro 12 feet between you and the hole.
Yeah.
Find that big body of water and that's where the ball's going.
Yeah. You're talking about Scioto with the creek? Or are you talking
I'm talking about Plantation.
Yeah, Plantation. Capua. Yeah. Is there a creek at Scioto? I thought there was.
Mm,
yeah, I got to play.
A predominant one.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to play Scioto once and I remember like, I got there and the pro was like, I got to show you something. And I was like, what is it? You know, he walks me over to the driving range and there's like on the edge of the driving range, there's like a little like brass plaque seated in the grass. And it says on this date, you know, probably in the 50s, Jack Nicklaus took his first golf swing ever right here.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty wild.
We hit balls next to DJ, VJ one day.
Oh, cool.
I'm just talking like they're an inch and a half deep, and they're in a perfectly straight line, and they're like 3 feet long. It's like, how do you do that?
Yeah. It's that reverse C, dude. I don't know. He's just, he gets it going.
Yeah. Strong man.
Yeah. So I'm definitely, I don't know what, it, there's, is there really,
when is that?
It's in July.
When is what?
Valhalla? No, May.
May.
Yeah. May, PGA. May
15th. That's coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I don't even think I know what, how to, I don't, I think it's just kind of like, you just need to immerse yourself.
I think the statute of limitations has expired. I encourage you to do this. You're not supposed to. I took the caddy bib with me.
It would say Beam on the back, which is so cool.
Mine has my last name on the back, but it wasn't.
Oh,
my
that's name. That's interesting. Yeah. It wasn't pertaining to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, so there was something else I wanted to bring up, which was, you know, it was interesting because we're talking about caddies and like Michael Castillo kind of functioning as a caddy for that round. And it's like, if you think about golf, like, it's like, you know, you're obviously not playing against other people. You're comparing your ability to compete against the course or the conditions or whatever. And so it's funny to think about like a caddy really as like, you know, because I have like a lot of advisors, right? Like even Rolfing, right? Like we talk to him now and he sort of like walks you through situations, you know, et cetera. And like, he's like, oh, well, maybe if you do it this way, it'll be better. And there is like a real component to that in golf. And I find that like when you do actually, you know, I mean, you know, like when you're with someone that knows the course, it just makes such a difference in terms of like the positive experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think too, for me, I'm not a good player, but you know, you have a conversation with somebody about what you're trying to do. And as you're able to talk through that, it's so different than having a hit and giggle on Saturday morning and you just, you know, pull a club and go hit it. But if you have, you know, a 15-second conversation about, all right, we're going to hit a layup, we're going to go for it, how far is that bunker, what club should I hit, where am I trying to leave this ball? Like, as you actually progress through that thought, to me, the ability to execute gets a little easier.
Yeah. That's interesting. I had so I'm at UGP now, you know, the Urban Golf Performance in Austin. And I don't know what you'll think about this, but yesterday I was getting a lesson and it's like a fitness country club. You know, it's like really high end mobility. They got Theraguns, they got a sauna, they got an ice bath.
You're going to get me in there soon.
You got to go, dude. Yeah. Everyone, if you're in Austin and you haven't been over to UGP, they'll give free tours.
Where is it in town?
It's on 35th. Just off
Central,
just off
Lamar,
yeah, just off Lamar, and you know, so I'm in there getting a lesson from this kid Harrison, you know, and he's like, hey man, like let's hit some drives, you know, let's play a hole and pick a course, and he's scrolling through the list of courses and there's Old Wilshire Country Club, you know, like, oh, I used to play there, let's pick that one, you know. Yeah. So he goes, okay, cool. Well, like, what's your favorite hole there? And I was like, I've had bad memories on all of them, you know, like, I don't know which to pick. So we picked the second hole. It's a nice par five. It's like, you know, it's like a little over 500 yards, 520 or something. And, you know, when I used to play there, I would hit a cut and there's OB right on almost every hole. So a cut is nice because you can just take it up the safe route and let it fall back. Now I kind of play a draw off the tee. And so I looked at the hole very differently, you know, even on the simulator, you know, and I was like, bam, smashed it right going right. And I was like, fuck, you know, and I hit another one and then I'm two gone. And Harrison goes, hang on, stop. I was like, all right. And he goes, hey, get behind the ball, close your eyes, visualize your best draw drive you've ever hit. So I visualized 18 at Kapalua. Absolutely bombed this drive. You know what I mean, except Kapalua is a great draw drive, you know?
Such a cool tee shot.
Yeah, too. You could take it. You're taking it out. It feels 90 degrees to the fairway.
Yeah.
But everything goes back. And so I visualize it and, you know, just like walking with the ball and just like felt like a very similar golf swing, to be honest with you. But it was perfect. And I was just thinking about like how much, because like you play a lot of golf, Alex. I play at least once a week.
I'm trying to play once a week.
That's a high volume of golf. And you're talking like these are 18 hole rounds, like full deal. You know, I mean, it's not like Butler.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I'd like to play a round of golf a week on average.
So I'm thinking like, you know, you said you're not a good player, and I didn't interrupt you, but like, you are a good player. What's your handicap?
2.8.
This fucking guy.
Oh my God.
So hold on. No. I've actually found a new way, because everybody asks, you start talking about golf with people and they're like, oh, are you a good golfer? It's a totally subjective question. So I actually have a new way to answer that question.
Okay.
Okay, we'll ask you. Are you a good golfer?
I'm the worst player in my family.
Fucking
misleading, but true.
Such a Sebastian.
But it takes the pressure off. It takes the pressure off. Because like, golf's so weird. Like, if you go out and you say, I'm a 2 handicap, I'm a 3 handicap, and you go shoot 86, which I can do any day of the week,
yeah.
Everybody that you're with is like,
you know what I need to do? You know what I'm going to do? You know what I'm going to do?
But you can do the opposite, too.
I do conversationally, Sam.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say, have you seen Be the Ball?
Your thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I sent you a copy. It's like an hour and a half, meditation, the whole thing.
I've never spent an hour and a half listening to that. So, no, send it.
I'm going to send it. It's a film.
Okay.
It's unreleased. I suppose if you happen to email me, I'll send it to you as well if you're listening. I don't care. But I'll send it to you. And I think, because to be a 2.8, you have the mechanics down. I think you just lose it on the golf course. This is an intervention.
What is he losing? He's a 2.8.
He loses his brain.
Yeah, but I would argue.
Do you have a bad
argue,
time? Is that what you're saying?
A bad time? No, I'm...
He doesn't have a bad time. It's just...
Mellowed out in the last few years.
Do you have like a goal when you go out on the golf course? Like, do you want to be a scratch golfer?
So I do keep like some mini goals. Mm-hmm. And honestly, my problem right now, I don't have access to a facility to really practice. So that we were talking about the other day, my expectations have drastically changed.
In 2024, what's your best round?
75.
Yeah.
Last weekend?
No.
Not really?
No. 70.
But last weekend was 2 rounds in the 70s.
So what are we trying to optimize here?
So for me,
practicing,
like, my goal is I would love to have my scoring average for a year be sub 80. 79.9.
Okay.
Be great.
Yeah, not handicap.
Just
so you want to have, you don't necessarily want to have low rounds. You just want to have fewer high rounds.
Well, we talked about, for me, like, the way I enjoy golf today is, number one, not losing a ton of money whenever I go play. That's chief objective number one.
Same, yeah.
But honestly, like, what I really enjoy is if I can spend a very minimal amount of time searching for my ball over the course of 18 holes, I'm going to have fun. And we were talking about, I'm going to shoot 76 to 83, 85% of the time that I play golf. Where it fits in there is how many times I hit it out of bounds and how many times I make a putt.
I can't agree with this more, honestly, because I said this to so many people.
Disagree or agree?
No, agree, because I'm a pretty good short game player, and I lose my strokes off the tee. And I'll play with people, and we'll talk about it. And I'll say, hey, I would always rather 3-putt and 4-putt and stay in play. And I know, and people very much disagree with me. But as long as I'm not looking for the ball, or I'm like starting out of position on a hole,
I know what you're saying.
Re-tee, like, that's what makes me mad.
Man, 3-putt.
I think I can get over that, but I don't experience it. I don't really 3-putt, so I don't know that feeling.
Hmm.
You're making a face.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would rather.
He's got a lab putter now. He hasn't 3-putted in 6 months.
Make putts. But I think I would rather. I mean, here's an example is, I can't remember what hole it was, but remember when I topped it off the tee with my 5-wood?
At Barton Creek?
Yeah, went right when the car curl drove by.
Where were we?
At a 5-wood.
Was it 8?
8, yeah. Up the hill.
Yeah.
Kind of short par 4. I topped it. No. It went nowhere. And then I, like, it literally fell off the tee box.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm playing it. And then just kind of worked my way up to the green. And I was like stoked. You know what I mean?
That's different, though.
That's different. Okay.
The problem is if you hit it like 220 and it peels off left or right, and then you're like dropping it and there's trees in your way. So your next shot sucks.
That's miserable. Hard.
And then like you're on a different hole than everyone you're playing with because they're going up to the green.
So what I also think is really interesting too is if you go play an iconic golf course, a bucket list golf course, something like that, I've found if I play like garbage, I don't even.
You don't look at the course.
They're like, duh, what did you think about the third hole? I'm like, I can't remember what the third hole was because I hit it nine times.
It wasn't even on the third
hole. Yeah, exactly. my big
never
thing,
found it.
To me, one of the most pressure, like self-induced pressure shots that I've ever had, first tee at Cypress.
Ooh.
The road is right in front of you.
Such an innocuous hole.
And we went off. We were the first tee time off.
Yep.
It's foggy. You know, the hole, it's exactly what it should be if you're going to play Cypress.
Yeah.
Perfect. Put the ball on the ground, and I remember just being like, God, all I want to do is just hit this ball down the fairway.
Yeah.
If I can hit this shot down the fairway, I'm going to have a good rest of the day.
Were you thinking about the driving range just to the right?
Was OB? I what?
There's a driving range OB, right?
Yeah, we did not go to the driving range.
No, about hitting it into
getting
it
involved there, because it can happen to even the best of us. You could
I'd like to think I'm a little mentally tougher than that. And I also learned, like, really, again, growing up athlete, whatever, you have to take the negative thought out of your brain. And so you have to just focus on what you want to do, not what you don't want to do. If you start focusing on what you don't want to do, you're eventually going to do that.
Yeah.
So that was, that was a fun tee shot. The other one also involves Jack.
Okay.
So my dad was working on the deal to take the President's Cup to Muirfield Village. And we were playing golf. I was a teenager at the time. We went to Ohio State game. We're playing golf with Dan Sullivan. And we're probably on like the 12th hole or something. Having a very nice day. And I put my ball on the ground. My dad and Dan have already teed off. I put my ball on the ground, and a golf cart starts driving up from behind us. There's like nobody else out there. And I turn around, and it's Jack Nicklaus in a golf cart. And I'm like, oh my God. As a 13-year-old or whatever I was like, just get it in the air. Just get it in the air. That was my only thing that I wanted to do. And I take a swing and I hit it, and I actually hit a good shot. And I was like, thank God. If I had like topped one or, you know, skied a driver in front of Jack Nicklaus, it would have been kind of tough. But
yeah, that's very much like, he would just see right through you, you know.
But the funny thing is that he's seen so many topped golf balls. Oh, it wouldn't 100%. Matter at all, but no. It would just be mattering to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, on that level, Jack becomes kind of like a woman. You know what I mean? Like you want to impress this entity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I relate. Like, he's like, do you have an opinion on Tiger or Jack?
I mean, I'm 31 years old, dude. Tiger's my guy.
Yeah.
Do you have an opinion on Tiger and Jack?
Yeah.
It's Tiger?
Yeah, well, I just think, like,
what's the opinion? Like, who we like more? Who's the better golfer?
Who's actually the greatest? And it comes down to the major debate, which is 15 to 18.
Yeah, I buy into that. I think that weighs into it a little bit, but the stretch that he had was just...
Also, my version of the take is that, like, there was more technological advancement during Tiger's era, and he maintained dominance throughout that, whereas, like, you know, with Jack, it was a little bit different, you know? Like, the clubs were different. It wasn't athletic, you know, as athletic.
Yeah, and I think, look, all you can do is go beat the guys that you're playing against.
Yeah.
It's not his fault that he was born in whatever year he was born in, and Tiger was born in whatever year he was born in. But that stretch, 2000 to, you know, 2010 or whatever that stretch was.
Yeah.
I mean, those numbers are ridiculous.
Every fifth tournament.
It's crazy.
You're coming home with a trophy.
Yeah. And I mean, like, this doesn't matter in this debate, but I think you're a perfect example in terms of what you're goal is for the game of golf and democratizing the game of golf and bringing more people into the game of golf. There's not a single person on earth that's done that better than Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And so, again, this podcast apparently is just about my dad, but we left to go to Australia in 96. It's going to be the first year. 98 was going to be the first year the President's Cup was outside of the United States.
Can you tell this story in Australian accent?
Oh, man, you're going to make me do my Australian accent on...
He's got it good. Yeah.
So when I moved back from Australia, I had an Australian accent. And my biggest beef with my dad is that when I moved back, he didn't shake me as a 7-year-old kid and say, just keep talking like this. So now I talk like a normal American and have no advantages when I go out to the bar.
But you pull it out every once in a while.
We don't need to talk about it.
You think it would have been better or worse for the VC, you think?
Way better. Everything's better.
Yeah.
There's no downsides, JoJo.
People care.
Yeah.
Wait, Alex isn't the friend.
Yeah.
That Alex is that friend.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you've told that story?
I told it, not on camera.
Not on camera.
That's me.
It's an incredible story.
It's a great story.
Yeah.
It's good.
I mean, if the world could hear it,
only if only.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to stay just off between camera. Us off camera.
But I mean, what's great now as you're listening is that you can we'll just be silent for a minute and you can just imagine.
I don't want people doing that either, I don't think.
I guess maybe to sum it up, it's like imagine what kind of trouble you could get into by committing to the bit.
Good trouble.
Good trouble. Rom-com trouble.
Yeah.
It's great having you on.
Yeah. So with that, you have a call, dude. Yeah. Are you okay?
Oh, I'm good. 15? We're okay. Good.
Yeah. No, I think I'm excited. What else? Should we talk about anything else? Golf in Austin?
Just any last...
Mo Willie? Actually, Alex has a great... I don't know if you've heard Alex's pitch for Mo Willie.
To save it? Yeah, from itself?
The irony would be to just move away from
save the real Muni?
To save Mo Willie.
Yeah, I don't know if...
You don't want to say it on camera.
I think I have. So one of my favorite places, I'll give like a little sneak peek, but I don't want to give away all the cards. One of my favorite places golf related on earth is Harding Park. Have you been there?
Mm-hmm.
I know you've been there.
San Francisco TPC course.
San Francisco TPC course, but it was a municipal golf course. It was owned and operated by the city of San Francisco forever. It had kind of gotten completely run down. And then the tour wanted to put an event there. And so I think it was the NEC, it was the match play event. They wanted to have the match play event there. And then eventually the President's Cup went there too. And so the tour came in and did a partnership with the city of San Francisco. And so the city still owns the land. All of the maintenance crew are city of San Francisco employees, but the tour via the TPC division operates the golf side of it. And they have, if the three of us wanted to go play golf there or anybody else watching, you know, I'm making up these numbers, but it's $600 to go play golf. If you have a California license plate, it's $250. And if you have a City of San Francisco driver's license, then it's $50 or whatever it is. And don't quote me on those numbers, but it's way tiered down.
Yeah.
And I think there's... an opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really cool model, and it's preserved a piece of the golfing history of that town.
Yeah.
And now, like, I got the chance to take two of my best friends and we went around Harding Park, and literally they're not like golf junkies. They love to play golf, but they don't know the history of the game, probably the same level that we pay attention to it. And they're just like, you have somebody doing Tai Chi 8 feet away from you as you're standing on the 18th tee box, and you're like, what in the world is going on? It's just the coolest vibe. It's incredible. And I mean, the bones of it.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable golf course. Yeah.
Yeah. Very beautiful. I love that golf course.
Olympics right across the lake as you come down 13, 14. And
yeah,
it's cool.
Well, Austin golf, more to come.
Yeah. I mean, this city, I mean, we all love this city. I moved here in 2015. Again, golf brought me here. Actually, another really cool little story. So as my dad, you know, started to play in those amateur events, they used to host the Harvey Pennock Invitational at Austin Country Club. This is before match play had come to ACC. And so that was their big event of the year, was this really national amateur event. And my dad had played in it 2 years in a row. And he gave me a head cover from the 2012 Harvey Pennock Invitational. And I had it on my driver forever. It was this cool white leather, just cool head cover. And so I was working at the tour and I get a call from my boss and they say, hey, we're going to relocate you. I actually ran the event at Harding Park when Cadillac was the title, in between Dell taking over and moving the event to Austin. And then myself and a couple other people were part of the team that the tour moved to Austin to launch match play here. And so they say, you're going to move to Austin. Dell's going to title the event, and it's going to be at Austin Country Club. So I call my dad. I'm all fired up. This is a promotion for me. Like, you know, everything's going well. And my dad goes, where are they going to host the event? And I said, Austin Country Club. And he goes, no. Are you sure it's not Austin Golf Club? I was like, no, it's Austin Country Club. He goes, there's no chance. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, I've been there, I've played there. You can't host a PGA Tour event at that golf course. Like, it's, you know, locked in by water. There's nowhere to build hospitality. That's not it. I bet it's at Austin Golf Club. I'm like, yeah, dude, like, I have a job offer. I just was informed of the responsibility, the job, like, everything, but I'm wrong. You're right. And and so he goes, well, if it is at Austin Country Club, best of luck, because you got a hell of a job on your hands.
Interesting.
And so so to button all that up, I've been in Austin for probably a year and a half at this point, and I'm playing golf, and I had never noticed, I'd never even put a single thought that I had a head cover from 2012 from the Harvey Penick Invitational at Austin Country Club that had been on my bag for 3 or 4 years at that point. And now life and work had taken me to Austin Country Club.
Interesting.
3 or 4 years later.
And that is very bizarre.
Yeah. And so I literally was like holding it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of bizarre.
Yeah. It's like an omen.
Yeah.
It's and then, almost like a past tense. It's almost like someone went and handed that to you in the past.
It was like, and what was weird about it was when I figured it out. Like, I'd already run a match play event, never thought twice about this head cover. And I just took it off my driver one day and I looked at it and I was like, man, this is serendipity, whatever word you want to use. It's pretty weird.
Aliens.
And so getting to host my dad at that first match play and like showing him what we built and stuff was cool.
Yeah.
And that event, man, I mean, talk about bittersweet watching it disappear.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful with everything that's going on in the world of golf that there can be somehow something can get figured out.
Match play event would be cool.
Where should it be?
I don't know what's I'd love to see something back in Austin.
But that's what I mean. Like, what golf course in Austin?
I don't know if
you put a tournament on.
I don't know if you could do it anywhere else. I think like that event has become such a fabric of the community here, and it was just something that it would be this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the week that it would be. It's Thursday. So yeah, it would literally be right now. So I'm hopeful that something can get figured out, but that was sad to go last year and know that that was it and it was going away.
We might get a baseball team. Doesn't really. Whatever.
That doesn't scratch my itch.
Same ring to it. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining, man. This is awesome. This is fun.